Blog Talk Radio.
It is Monday, October 3rd, 2016. I am your host, Brother Ben, from the battlefield city of La Crosse, Wisconsin. That was weird. I had a delay there. I called in, and I didn't want to start the show right away, even though I called in, like, almost 15 minutes ago. Weird. But, oh well, at least I'm on the air right now. That'd be kind of an annoying glitch if it never did start the show. Even though I was called up, be like, what? but anyway, it was a good weekend overall. Got to make my beef rouladen that I was talking about before. I want Oktoberfest for my family to be a time when we celebrate our German ancestry and their marriage and family before God. And the fall season, and the ushering of the fall season, you know. It's like I told the teens when I preached yesterday. You know, whatsoever ye eat, whatsoever ye drink, whatsoever ye do, do it all to the glory of God. You know, we're never supposed to make any sort of occasion a, quote, drunk fest, unquote. You know, I wasn't afraid to sugarcoat it to the kids, the teenagers in my youth group. Hey, there are people who drink during this time of year, and there are people who drink in general, and we need to stay away from that kind of stuff because it's dangerous. I told May, having a little celebratory toast, that's debatable. You know, you can say whether that's okay or not, but at the very least, we can all agree that the way we get drunk with various things, that's more serious. But yeah. Anyway, let's look at the book of 2 Samuel. We're going to be getting our study on 2 Samuel, chapters 1 through 4, at least as much of that as possible. And this is a very interesting set of scriptures. I think I did a message on this, actually, for the teens, like, some time ago. I remember this now. Okay. This is in regards to Saul dying and something interesting happening. Well, let's get right to that right now. So if you want to turn your Bibles, please, book of 2 Samuel chapter 1. We're going to start right now. 2 Samuel chapter 1. Now it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had abode 2 days in Ziklag. It came even to pass from the third day that, behold, a man came out of the camp of Saul with his clothes rent and earth upon his head. And so it was, when he came to David, that he fell to the earth and did obeisance. And David said unto him, from whence comest thou? And he said unto him, out of the camp of Israel am I escaped. And David said unto him, how went the matter, I pray thee, tell me? And he answered, that the people are fled from the battle, and many of the people are also fallen dead. Saul and Jonathan his son are dead also. And David said unto the young man that told him, how knowest thou that Saul and Jonathan his son be dead? And the young man that told him said, as I happened by chance upon Mount Gilboa, behold, Saul leaned upon his spear, and lo, the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me, and I called unto me, and answered, here am I. And he said unto me, who art thou? And I answered him, I am an Amalekite. And he said unto me, stand, I pray thee, upon me, and slay me, for my anguish is come upon me, because my life is yet whole in me. So I stood upon him and slew him, because I was sure that he could not live after that he was fallen. And I took the crown that was upon his head and the bracelet that was on his arm, and I had brought them hither unto my lord. Then David took hold of his clothes and rent them, and likewise all the men that were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted, even for Saul and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they are fallen by the sword. All right, so pause for a second. There's a couple of things that need to be commented on. One thing is the irony here that the Lord had him die by an Amalekite. Why is that ironic? Because that's the very group of people that Saul was commissioned by God to take out. One of the things that disqualified Saul as being king of Israel still in God's eyes was that he did not take out all the Amalekites. In fact, he spared the king of the Amalekites, Aglag, I think his name is. He's in the middle of 1 Samuel. So it's irony that the very group of people that he was supposed to punish but didn't as much as he was supposed to are the same group of people that kill him. Now, it's ironic that person's ancestry is an Amalekite, and he slays him. Okay? Another thing that's interesting is he's trying to, this Amalekite servant's trying to make it sound like as though he did something noble. Hey, I helped in the king's suicide. Yeah, that's not something to be proud of. He's sorry about it, but he's almost kind of, oh, my Lord, you know, he's saying, my Lord, you know, like as though he's trying to get favors with David. Hey, look, I was very respectable about it. You know, I took the crown and the bracelet and made sure that those Philistines wouldn't take it. You know, I wanted to give it to you because you're the rightful king now, because Jonathan and Saul died. And the other thing to look at, too, is David had times when he was... David had times when he was being persecuted by Saul. And in many of those instances, when he was going through this tough time, he could have easily have thought sinfully about this enemy, this father-in-law of his. And yet, instead of being like, oh, I'm glad that jerk is dead, now I can become king, he's sad about it. He's mourning for this man who is his enemy. Partially because this man was officially politically the king of Israel, and he has loyalty to that. But at the same time, you know, he had this compassionate attitude to be merciful to his enemies. So that's a good lesson that we can get upon here alone: the idea of not being like, "Oh, thank God he's dead now," kind of mentality. We should never be like that with anybody. I mean, there's some people in my life that I don't like. I don't like certain things about, and certain people that I wish they would change, and I don't like the way they are. But I'd be sad. I'd be disappointed if they died too. It'd be like, you know, they could have done so much with their life, and they didn't. You know, just compassion, the idea that some of those people might be in hell, you know, when they die. We should never gloat in anybody's death or anybody's suffering. That's what we can learn here, right here. But something interesting is going to happen, too. And David said unto the young man that told him, "Whence art thou?" And he answered, "I am the son of a stranger, an Amalekite." And David said unto him, "How wast thou not afraid to stretch forth thine hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" And David called one of the young men and said, "Go near and fall upon him." And he smote him that he died. And David said unto him, "Thy blood be upon thy head, for thy mouth hath testified against thee, saying, I have slain the Lord's anointed." And David lamented over this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son, and also bade them to teach the children of Judah the use of the bow. Behold, is written in the book of Jasher, "The beauty of Israel is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen? All right, so pause for a second. Two things. One, David's smart enough to point out, you know, you're acting like as though you're sorry about the matter, and yet you had no problem killing him. You ought to deserve death for that, too. Because this is the Lord's anointed king of Israel. You know, it's essentially, the main lesson here is, we could say that this idea of assisted suicide in this particular instance is considered sinful in God's eyes. We could make that application, although I don't know if we could make that application in all fairness to somebody who is like stage 4 cancer and is going to die anyway, and just to suffer, ease their pain. That's a whole other controversy in itself I'm not going to get into. But this type of suicide, we can all agree, is this form of assisted suicide, we can all agree, is sinful. Okay? Yes, Saul did tell the man to kill him. Okay? But instead of doing that, he should have tried to flee, you know, or should have done something else. But it's also David judging this man for, hey, you're not as innocent as you're making yourself out to be. I'm not going to trust you. You're trying to make it sound like you're a good servant, blah, 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 blah. And I ain't going to tolerate that. Have to be very careful of people like that. There are some people who, they'll do despicable things, and then they'll act like as though that they're not that bad, and yeah. And he's also still mourning the loss of Jonathan and Saul, basically saying, you guys died too early. Jonathan especially is mourning about, because that was like his best friend. That's got to be really tough. Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ascalon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. Ye mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields of offerings, for there the shield of the mighty is vilely cast away. The shield of Saul, as though he had not been anointed with oil. So he's saying that this is a very dishonorable way for him to die. He seems to blame this Amalekite more than he does Saul wanting to commit suicide, which, it's shameful enough that Saul did want to commit suicide because of the idea that he didn't want to be captured, perhaps didn't want to be humiliated in regards to the defeat of his kingdom, defeat of him as a king, whatever the case may be. But John Wesley makes an interesting commentary in verse 121. He says, let there be, this is no proper imprecation, but a passionate representation of the horror which he conceived at this public loss, which was such as if he thought every person or thing which contributed to it were fit to bear the tokens of divine displeasure, such as this, when the earth wants the necessary influences of dew and rain, fields of offering, that is, fruitful fields, may produce fair and goodly fruits to be offered to to God, vilely, dishonorably. For it was a great reproach to any soldier to cast away or lose his shield. Cast away by themselves, that they might flee more swiftly, as the Israelites did, and with Saul with the rest, as if he had been no more than a common soldier, he was exposed to the same kind of death and reproach as they were. So yeah, John Wesley is pointing that out too, the idea that this is a very dishonorable way for Saul to die. The Amalekites should not have said, oh yeah, sure, I'll kill you. He should have been like, no, you can't do that. You know, that you are a king. You need to be treated more, you need to be more respectable about this. His death could have easily been avoided. But anyway, from the blood of the stained, from the fatty of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in the death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with other delights, who put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel. How the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle. O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How mighty the mighty are fallen, the weapons of war are perished. End of chapter 1. All right, now, there's a couple of things I need to address. First of all, David takes it a step further. He doesn't just feel remorseful for Saul and Jonathan's loss, you know, this person who was his enemy. His father, he decides to honor him publicly, to speak. They were lovely and pleasant in their lives. He acknowledges the good. I'm sure he had plenty of good moments with Saul before Saul declared war, sought to war against him. You know, this was before, it's like maybe perhaps he was like a father figure almost, since he was his father-in-law after all. Another thing that needs to be commented, no, David was not gay with Jonathan. Okay, I know there's that statement, thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women, but it's ridiculous that there are some people out there that think that Jonathan and David were gay lovers. Again, the whole idea of homosexuality, that's another topic in itself, but this is a love like a friendship. This is not a love like a gay love. This is, I don't know where people get this type of idea from. You know, these are also the same people who think that Jesus was gay with the disciple John. Just come on now. Why do we have to be so perverted? But not even just that, I think when people make those type of remarks, they don't understand the type of idea that friendship requires. You know, friendship is harder to come by, the real true values behind it. There's a lot of people that I've seen that have come and gone. People that don't stay loyal to each other, people that don't really think about, well, the idea of loving people that are outside your family and outside your significant other. You know, I've had people laugh when I've said, I love you, you know, to people that are more than just that. You know, I say I love you to some of my coworkers. Hey, I love you as a friend, I'll say to some people, and they'll laugh like, why do you be that way? Love has absolutely hardly anything, if anything at all, to do with sex. Okay, I know some people say that sex equals love, or love equals sex, but that's not true. Well, at least for your significant other, it could be a piece of that puzzle, but it is only a tiny piece of that relationship puzzle. In fact, John Wesley says in 1:26 for his commentary, distressed, that is the loss of thee, for beside the loss of a true friend, which is inestimable, he lost him who could both and undoubtedly would have given him a speedy and quiet and sure possession of the kingdom, whereas now he met with long troublesome interruptions of women. That is, the love wherein they love their husbands or children for their affections are usually more ardent than men. So it's the poetic saying, John Wesley is kind of saying, that, you know, that this is a very special friendship that, poetically, he uses that language because women tend to have this very passionate, strong love for their husbands or children. It's usually more ardent than men. You know, men are not always known for being loving. In fact, some people will be like, "Oh, you're gay," because when you're acting in a loving way. And you know, I know gay people don't like it when people say, "Oh, that's gay," when something is something to look down on. And I don't blame them for that. But you know, at the same time, trying to say that that type of love and friendship, oh, that's not manly. Yes, it is. A real man is a man who's not afraid to be strong but loving at the same time. And that's what a guy like David was. That's the type of man that you ought to be. You ought to love the people in your life, and you ought to be strong and not allow that to make you soft either. Friendship is something that a lot of us don't seem to grasp very well. I mean, we have no problem seeing kids' cartoons depicting friendship, but in life after, as we grow up, it really changes. And it's kind of sad that that's the case, because we need more friendships like this that are, you know, in that kind of affection of caring for each other's soul and caring for each other's well-being and whatever. But let's move on. Chapter 2. And it came to pass after this that David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord said unto him, "Go up." And David said, "Whither shall I go up?" And he said, "Unto Hebron." So David went up thither, and his two wives also, Ahinoam the Jezreelite, and Abigail, Nabal's wife, the Carmelite. That's funny. They always seem to mention Abigail as Nabal's former wife. They always have to make it that. They always have to make that emphasis there. So you remember, yes, Nabal. She was once Nabal's wife, but he was a jerk, so it's okay. and he died because of the Lord's judgment against him. But that's kind of weird, though. Why does it say her, but it doesn't say anything about Saul's daughter? Because he was married to Saul's daughter, Michal. Maybe just those two wives. It doesn't say that those are his only wives, because Michal is his other wife. But, yeah, it's kind of weird. How come she doesn't come with? You'd think she would especially go with, especially because that was her dad who died. But, anyway. And his men that were with him did bring David up, every man in his household. They dwelled in the cities of Hebron. And the men of Judah came, and they were anointed king, David king, over the house of Judah. And they told David, saying that the men of Jabesh-Gilead were they that buried Saul. And they sent messengers unto the men of Jabesh-Gilead, and said unto them, "Blessed are ye of the Lord, that ye have showed this kindness unto your Lord, even unto Saul, have buried him. And now show the Lord show kindness and truth unto you. I also will require you of this kindness, because ye have done this thing. Therefore now let your hands be strengthened, and ye be valiant, for your master Saul is dead, and also the house of Judah have anointed me king over them." Okay, so he's giving respect to the people who buried him, because they did a good thing. But Abner, son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, took Ibosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim, and made him king over Gilead, over the Asherites, and over Jezreel, and over Ephraim, and over Benjamin, and all over Israel. Okay, so Abner is not yet convinced that it's time for David to rule, so he makes Ibosheth, the son of Saul, to replace him. And that time David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah, was 7 years and 6 months. And Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ibosheth, son of Saul, went over to Mahanaim, to Gibeon. And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out and met by the pool of Gibeon. Joab, oh, that guy is an interesting fellow. You have to read more of 2 Samuel to see what I mean by that. Joab, he's... Yeah, and Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went over and met by the pool of Gibeon, and they sat down, one on one side of the pool, and the other on the other side of the pool. And Abner said to Joab, "Let the young men now arise and play before us." And Joab said, "Let them arise." And then there arose and went over by number 12 of Benjamin, which pertained to Ibosheth, the son of Saul, the 12 of the servants of David. And they caught every one his side by the head, and thrust his sword into his fellow's side, so they fell down together. Wherefore that place is called, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that, which is in Gibeon. And there was a very sore battle that day, that and Abner was beaten, and the men of Israel before servants of David. So they were supposed to meet. If I'm understanding this right, they're supposed to meet together in this meeting, and Joab has them attack, has his guys apparently attack in regards to this situation. Abner seemed to have been beaten up too, but he's still alive. And there are three sons of Zeruiah there: Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. And Ishael was as light of foot as a wild roe. So apparently this guy was a quick fellow. And Ishael pursued after Abner, and in going he turned not to the right hand or the left from following Abner. And Abner looked behind him and said, Art thou Ishael? And he answered, I am. And Abner said unto him, Turn thee aside to thy right hand or to thy left, and lay hold on one of the young men, and take thee his armor. But Ishael would not turn aside from following of him. And Abner said again to Ishael, Turn thee aside from following me. Wherefore should I smite thee to the ground? How then should I hold up my face to Joab thy brother? Okay, so this Ishael guy wants to try to claim some glory here and trying to take him out. He's following him, and Abner's like, go away, I don't want to hurt you. Leave me alone. Okay, go home, basically, is what he's saying, and take care of your armor or whatever. I can sort of understand this. And he's like, I don't want to kill you. I don't want to do that because I don't want to tell your brother Joab what I've done. So even though there was a skirmish with these two forces, he's still respectable of Joab, this military elder. Okay. Howbeit he refused to turn aside, wherefore Abner, with the hinder of the end of his spear, smote him under the fifth rib, that the same spear came out behind him, and he fell down there and died in the same place. It came to pass that as many came to the place where Ishael fell down, died, and stood still. Okay, so he didn't listen, and Abner defended himself and stabbed him in the ribs with his spear. Yeah, this is definitely stuff not for little children. Joab also and Abishai pursued after Abner, and the sun went down when they were come to the hill of Abmah that lieth before Gaia by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. And the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together after Abner and became one troop and stood atop of on a hill. Then Abner called to Joab and said, Shall the sword devour forever? Knowest thou not that it will be bitterness in the latter end? How long shall it be then ere thou bid the people to return from following their brethren? And Joab said, As God liveth, unless thou hadst spoken, surely then in the morning the people had gone up, everyone following his brother. So Joab blew a trumpet, and all the people stood still, and pursued after Israel no more, neither fought they any more. So this huge conflict could have happened, but Joab stopped them after Abner said something to him. And Abner and his men walked all that night through the plain and passed over Jordan and went through Bithron, and they came to Mahanaim. And Joab returned from following Abner, and when he had gathered all the people together, there lacked of the servants of David 19 men in Ishael. But the servants of David had smitten of Benjamin and of Abner's men, so that 300 and 70 men died. They took up Ishael and buried him in a spelunker of his father, which was in Bethlehem. And Joab and his men went all the day and night. They came to Hebron, break of day. End of chapter 2. Now, we don't have enough time, okay, but this is eventually going to lead to Abner's death. Because Joab's going to eventually kill him. You know, I'm not going to be able to read that. I think that's the fourth chapter where Joab eventually kills him out of revenge, because at that time when he ministered peace, he didn't know that he killed Ishael. But prior to that, at some point, Abner is going to try to make peace with David. You know, he wants to be his replacement general. He's like, you know, yeah, I helped install Ibosheth, but he doesn't really want to continue this much longer. And I want to be on your side kind of mentality. But then before he could have him as in the service, Joab kills him, and then somebody else kills Ibosheth, so that the war eventually ends once and for all the tribes of Israel are united. But what I remember when I preached before is the idea that There's a lot of dishonorable things that people will do to try to give themselves glory. There's somebody who killed Ibosheth thinking he was going to get glory, and David kills him for it. And this Amalekite thinks that he's going to get glory for it, trying to sugarcoat what happened and try to be all nicey-nice, and he dies for it too. And yet you see other people being more honorable. You know, it's a very tough thing to think about, this stuff of war. But that's all the time we got for today, discussing this very interesting study. Tune in tomorrow, Lord willing. We have a show tomorrow. We will be studying Psalms chapters 48 through 50, at least as much of that as possible. So hope you guys enjoyed today, and until then, God bless you, and thank you so much for listening.